Now, when we finished up the last Aryan Nations broadcast, Dave spoke of taking the microcosmic view of Aryan Nations and backing it off into a wider scope macrocosmic view for the World Anti-Communist League series. And that is, in fact, exactly what we're doing. So what we're talking here, and the reason that the Radio Free America broadcasts are particularly useful for this kind of thing, we're talking about a series of things, information on which are available to virtually anybody. Most of our sources, except for some of the books that we are able to track down, are not that difficult to find. And as you hear tonight, most of the sources that we use are newspaper articles and sections from books. But you can get information on any one of these segments by itself. The question is how do these things fit together? Because, of course, in the long run, it doesn't matter if you have a small group here, a small group there, and a small group there. They're all small groups, and they don't necessarily mean a lot of danger. However, as was the case before World War II in Germany and before 1933, this was in fact what the fascist apparatus was in Germany. It was a series of ostensibly small groups with no real affiliation, despite except for the fact that they liked to get out in the streets and brawl, and they hated communists. But as we all saw, those groups were in fact not just small groups, but in fact had a centralized purpose, and upon their coalescence, they became the force that we know as Nazism today, although again it was just fascism, and fascism has not gone away. And this is in fact what we're going to try and do with the World Anti-Communist League tonight. We're going to talk about a number of groups that, let's face it, when you just read about them in the news, and you hear about the extreme revanchist Bulgarian Freedom Brigade, you tend to look at them and say, ha ha, that's pretty funny. You know, this bunch of fanatic anti-communists who really think that single-handedly they're going to go out and roll up the Soviet bloc of nations. However, what we're going to point out tonight is that not only are these not single groups, but these groups are in fact united. And one of the main things that unites them is, of course, the World Anti-Communist League, but that they have connections in high places. And now that the Reagan administration has come to power in the United States, they have connections in higher places than they've ever had before, namely right to the very top of the most powerful military, industrial, and intelligence apparatus in the entire world, the United States government.
Now, with our Aryan Nations series, we just concluded in program number 13, the last hour or so of the last of our four Aryan Nations programs, we were talking about the Reagan administration as sort of the Aryan Nations government, in other words, the culmination of constitutional struggles between the military and civilian civilian sectors, the resolution of approximately a half a century of fascist activism, or the better part of a half century of fascist activism in North America and around the world, culminated with what we referred to as a Freikorps unit, sort of an underground extension of the military involving far right-wing parties, the Klan, the States' Rights Party, the Aryan Nations proper, the John Birch Society, and so forth. We looked at how all of those groups were incorporated into what we refer to as the Cuban Freikorps, a paramilitary milieu, basically an underground extension of the American military, put together in the United States, basically a CIA covert operation on U.S. territory designed to overthrow Castro. We looked at the incorporations of the far right-wing fascist political parties that we grouped under the title Aryan Nations and which intersect with Aryan Nations proper in the Cuban Freikorps, and we looked at how they, through the assassination of President Kennedy, overthrew the legitimate constitutional authority. We have been looking, or we wound up looking, at the Reagan administration as the culmination of the whole process that we had been looking at, beginning in 1934 with an attempted military coup based on officers around General MacArthur and perhaps even General MacArthur himself, and culminating, as we said, with the Kennedy assassination. We looked at the Reagan administration as the culmination of the whole process, and specifically, we took a look at how various elements of the Aryan Nations, in a sense, came to fruition with the Reagan administration. We also took a look at how the administration itself represents, in a sense, the culmination of the whole Freikorps ethic and methodology. The Freikorps, recall, was an underground military group put together. Well, it actually, in a sense, would be inaccurate to describe it as underground. At first, it was put together explicitly by the German government in cooperation with the military in order to put down the communist uprising that had occurred in Germany. After that, or to see to it that it didn't go further than it did. After that, the units, although officially disbanded, remained in place under the control of the German military, where they systematically assassinated the legitimate members of the German Democratic Republic, or the Weimar Republic, let's not confuse that. And they also, of course, wiped out all of their socialist and communist opponents. Now, the Fry Corps methodology, the use of civilian irregulars in the forming of them into a paramilitary extension of our national security establishment. Of course, we looked at it again, as I said, with regard to Operation 40 in the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Fry Corps that we spoke about. We also, to wound up in our last broadcast, looking at the Contras, the low-intensity warfare, as it's known, that is being waged against the government of Nicaragua and the Sandinistas. Now, the Reagan administration and many of the elements that we looked at in connection with the Aryan Nations, some of the Ku Klux Klan people around Camper, around David Duke, the people involved in the Grenada and Dominica operation, various people from 544 Camp Street, Dr. Oxner's son and so forth, David Duke again. We took a look at a lot of these far right-wing groups functioning as part of, I guess you could call it the Nicaraguan Fry Corps, if you will, meaning the Contras and those American national security personnel who are involved with their funding and logistical support as well as training. Okay, perhaps for the purposes of tonight's broadcast, it might make sense to refer to a Nicaraguan Fry Corps, meaning specifically the Contras and their American backers and supporters and the people training them and putting them into the field. Because what we're going to be looking at, well, what we're going to begin with again this evening is picking up not only where we left off last week, but with some of the information that with which we concluded the broadcast last week. Now, specifically, we're going to take a look at the Reagan administration, its involvement with the World Anti-Communist League, and the WACL itself as the vehicle for the putting of the Nicaraguan Fry Corps into the field. The Fry Corps methodology and ethic, I guess you could say, has, in a sense, reached its fruition with the World Anti-Communist League, which, in a sense, could be regarded, at least in its military sense, as a global Fry Corps. And we're going to be taking a look at how the Reagan administration and the various elements that we looked at in Aryan Nations are going to combine in this Fry Corps. And, as I say, we're going to begin with an article with which we wound up last week's broadcast. It's quite a long article. Nip's going to read it, and we'll interrupt it from time to time to interject things, because this this first article here is going to kind of set the table for the rest of not only this broadcast, but the second of our WACL series.
Okay, now, two last things, two admonitions, one a hard one and one a philosophical one. The hard admonition is, again, please, even if you think that you can handle listening to the whole show tonight, please put this thing on tape, because even more than most of our shows, the absolute welter of names, I mean, from the and all the groups we're going to be dealing with, the OUN Bandera, the Bielorussian SS, as Dave mentioned, the various Nicaraguan groups we're going to be dealing with, the Chinese groups, the Italian groups, I mean, just this incredible, the Taiwanese, the everybody.
Well, beyond that, we're going to be taking a look, too, at some groups that have been agitating for a breakup of the Soviet Union almost since its formation, and we're going to be taking a look at various areas of the world which most people don't even know about, let alone know how to pronounce, areas like Turkestan, Azerbaijan, and a lot of areas that are not going to have a whole lot of instant name recognition for a European or American.
That's right. So taping is very important. Just for nothing else, if you run into like a whole bunch of names, you can stop, you can go back, and you can listen to it again. It does get very complicated. The only other thing, and this is the last thing, and this is to these new listeners or folks who might have tuned this in before, yes, what we're doing, you new listeners out there, or you folks who just happen to be cruising past on the band while you're looking for something a little more easy listening, what we're doing is rather difficult to listen to in a fun sort of way, and it's rather intense. But the one thing I think in which you would find myself and Dave in agreement with the a lot of these right-wing groups is in the philosophy that democracy has to be fought for. Well, part of fighting for democracy is taking the trouble to find out what's really going on. That's the only way you can keep a democracy, anything resembling a democracy. There was a very good broadcast on today on National Public Radio about Argentina, a country that will come up a couple of times during the course of these two broadcasts. And the Argentinians now are going through an extended postmortem on their own days of rampant fascism, their own final solution going on in their cities, people being dragged away. And it's just amazing to hear the same good German stories that we heard in Germany after World War II. All the Argentinians, these perfectly nice people saying, gee, we just didn't know it was happening. You know, oh, we feel so bad that they were dragging away people by the thousands and killing them and throwing them out of airplanes into the ocean. Well, folks, as some of the commentators on NPR today pointed out, it was pretty damn hard to miss. And you really had to work to be that ignorant. And we like to think better of our audience, and we like to think that instead of working to be ignorant, they're going to work to be informed. And yes, these broadcasts are pretty intense, and they're pretty full of information, but sometimes democracy maybe, just maybe, is worth the work. Okay? Okay, enough of sermon. The first article we're going to read tonight, and as Dave said, the set piece for this whole thing, is from the Village Voice for October 22nd, 1985. The headline is The Old Rite's New Crusade. The article is by Joe Connison and Murray Wass. Connison, C-O-N-A-S-O-N, and Murray Wass, W-A-A-S. Hobbled by Congress in its pursuit of a proxy war against the Sandinista government in Nicaragua, the Reagan administration has turned to the private sector. With the encouragement and possible direction of the White House's National Security Council, private groups, partly funded by the governments of other countries, have provided military and police training to the Salvadoran military, as well as shipments of food, medicine, and combat gear to the Nicaraguan Contra rebels. Money has also been raised abroad for the purchase of weapons by the Contras. The level of private aid is estimated to be as high as $25 million a year. The network collecting and distributing aid to the Contras includes much of the traditional American far right, from the old China lobby and the John Birch Society to the Moonies and the Cuban exiles. But at its center is a little-known international propaganda outfit called the World Anti-Communist League, WACL. Funded by governments of Taiwan, South Korea, Saudi Arabia, and Paraguay, and by large private contributors in the U.S. and abroad. Chaired by retired Major General John K. Singlaub, and he's important, S-I-N-G-L-A-U-B, whose own affiliations could form a far-right directory, WACL met in Dallas last month and received the President's blessing for a renewed Cold War crusade. Skipping down. For the first time since its founding in 1968, WACL appears to have a purpose beyond its annual reunions for far-rightists from around the world. In years past, delegates from free and, quote, captive nations gathered beneath the blazing torch on the World Anti-Communist League's banner to debate the struggle against international communism and to dream of unleashing the nationalist Chinese and the Ukrainian freedom fighters. This year, such traditional obsessions were shunted aside in favor of a more fashionable notion, low-intensity warfare against Marxist governments in the Third World. Guerrillas from Nicaragua and Afghanistan displayed the evidence of real battle, and when Nelson Bunker Hunt, another prominent Dallas reactionary, showed up, they got more than just another speech. The one-legged Contra had company, a real Afghan mujahid, complete with burned stumps below the elbows. Elements that made up the original World Anti-Communist League were present, of course. Knots of nationalist Chinese, unable to converse with the other delegates. Slavic emigres, disgruntled because nearly everyone else has given up on rolling back the borders of the East Bloc. Old right red-baiters like Robert Morris, former counsel to the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee. But these remnants were dominated, both politically and stylistically, by the new idols of anti-communism. The civilian, military assistance, mercenary types from Alabama, who provided security for the Dallas conference and acknowledged Singlaub as their mentor. The general says he has asked them to avoid direct mercenary activities like the embarrassing border incident in Nicaragua last year in which two CMA members were killed. Skipping. As the far right's new media star, General Singlaub doesn't seem to mind the publicity he gets now. Much of that attention is based on Singlaub's connection to the White House, which dates back to his position as honorary Colorado state chairman of Ronald Reagan's 1980 campaign. But he has lately played down the connections between the Contra support network he operates and the Reagan administration. While Singlaub has admitted keeping the National Security Council, quote, informed about fundraising and other Contra aid, he insists that he no longer talks directly with his friends in the Pentagon, the CIA, the State Department, or the White House. Why such reticence? Direct links could be embarrassing to both Singlaub and his White House allies. WACL has had, and continues to have, a membership heavily infiltrated by fascist and anti-Semitic forces whose presence the Reagan administration tries hard to ignore. More importantly, Congress has barred the U.S. government from sending military aid to the Contras either directly or indirectly, and has permitted only, quote, humanitarian assistance. Only by maintaining a thin separation between itself and these Contra sponsors can the administration claim to be observing the prohibitions of the Boland Amendment. That screen was broken last week when Associated Press reporter Robert Perry revealed that Singlob's campaign was actually organized inside the White House and not independently, as the general and the administration have long insisted. Perry quoted anonymous, quote, current and former administration officials who told him that, quote, White House officials picked Singlob as the chief fundraising contact. According to these officials, Reagan National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane orally outlined the plan at a presidential briefing in the spring of 1984. No written memorandum was prepared in the hope of avoiding leaks. The president approved it, and the plan was put into effect by McFarlane's deputy, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. Perry also reported Wackel's role in the funneling of arms to the Contras, as well as non-lethal aid. In addition to Israel, which has already been identified as the source of Contra arms, the governments of South Korea and Taiwan were reported to have furnished weapons to the FDN. The South Korean and Taiwanese aid were said to have been provided by, quote, an anti-communist organization with close ties to those governments, unquote. That organization is, of course, WACL, the World Anti-Communist League, which maintains offices in a Taipei government building and runs its daily affairs out of a secretariat in Seoul. But WACL's bureaucracy in the Far East is far less important than its political ties to President Reagan and his circle. These long-standing links have been controversial even within the administration. 3 years ago, administration factions hotly debated whether President Reagan ought to send a message of support to the December 1982 WACL convention in Tokyo. The request had come through Peter Hanaford, the former aide to Reagan when he was governor of California and former partner of Michael Deaver, a top aide during the president's first term. Hanaford's company, which according to Justice Department records was paid $250,000 last year for its efforts as a registered agent of the Taiwanese government, was asked to obtain the Reagan message by the head of Taiwan's WACL chapter, who is also a Taiwanese government official. He had good reason to expect success from Hanaford, who had delivered Reagan for a photo session with honorary WACL chairman Ku Cheng Kang in 1977. But opposing any overt support to the World Anti-Communist League was L. Paul Bremer III, then the State Department's executive secretary, and now ambassador to the Netherlands. Bremer warned that WACL was a front group for Taiwan, whose endorsement by Reagan might injure relations with Peking, and moreover that WACL's membership was pocked with fascists, anti-Semites, and other unsavory types. A senior White House official told The Voice he agreed with Bremer. Quote, there were a few people here who tried to red flag the whole thing. The background of the League isn't that obscure. After all, the Washington Post ran a story about its anti-Semitism. But there was hardly any way we could deny that we knew ahead of time about the group's background. There was the making of a potential major flap here. In the end, Bremer's objections were brushed aside, and Reagan sent his greetings. But one question remains unanswered. Was Hanaford's company acting as a foreign agent for Taiwan, or for the World Anti-Communist League? Lobbying the White House on behalf of a foreign principal is illegal if the lobbyist fails to register and report his activities to the Justice Department. Within 10 days, a Justice Department official involved in enforcing the Foreign Agents Registration Act told The Voice, quote, if Hanaford did indeed carry out the activities as you described them, he would appear to have violated the statute. A spokesman for the Hanaford Company denied that he had ever represented the World Anti-Communist League. This year, according to Singlaub, the president was prepared to go further than merely sending a message to the WACL conference. The general told The Voice that John Lenkowski, another contact on the National Security Council staff, had arranged earlier this year for Reagan to address the convention in person at the NSC's recommendation. But the president's surgery and subsequent
recuperation
prevented a personal appearance. Instead, there was another Reagan message. Quote, I commend you all for your part in this noble cause. Our combined efforts are moving the tide of history toward world freedom. We must persevere and never falter. I send you all who help in your crusade for liberty my best wishes God bless you.
Nip, why don't we interrupt at this point and maybe comment a little bit on some of the stuff that some of the water that's already gone under the bridge, because this is a long article, and throw in our mutual respective 2 cents and then proceed on, because this is a long article, and I think there's a lot of stuff I know that I would like to comment on here, and I suspect probably the same with you. Two comments I wanted to make was to call attention to the audience's attention, the participation in this, I hate to use the same term over and over, but this paramilitary milieu, or World Freikorps, really, which is how you can think of the military activities of World Anti-Communist League, noting very quickly, Robert Morris, a member of the China lobby, a McCarthyite, a fellow who we looked at in Radio Free America number 11, in connection specifically with an organization called Conservatism USA, under whose auspices a great many military intelligence agents were brought to Dallas, Texas, quite possibly for the assassination of President Kennedy. Anyway, that certainly is the overwhelming appearance of why they were coming to Dallas, Texas. He's an old member, as I said, of the China lobby, affiliated with John Birch and so forth, a fellow we looked at in our Aryan Nation series. Also, take the note of the China lobby and Nelson Bunker Hunt. Now, Bunker Hunt, of course, we also looked at in Radio Free America number 11 in connection not only with the John Birch Society, but also with the assassination of President Kennedy. Both of those people, again, from our Aryan Nation series, showing up in connection with people from the China lobby, who we're going to talk about at greater length, and a great many other people, and they're working with the Reagan administration's ongoing effort on behalf of the Contras. And again, note that separating the Reagan administration and the WACL is impossible. It's not that they're coterminous, but this administration is inextricably linked with the World Anti-Communist League, both domestically and foreign, and with regard to our foreign policy.
Again, notice we're starting with this focus with Nicaragua. We tend to talk a lot because of the fact that, unlike other broadcasts, we like to follow up on where these groups came from and who they actually are tied to. We tend to talk about things that have happened in the past. And some people, perhaps, who do not have a very good knowledge of history, find it difficult to understand how the past connects to the present and inextricably to the future. Well, for those of you who are just beginning with this kind of stuff and need something current going on, I suggest to you that our involvement with Nicaragua and our ongoing involvement with the Contra forces there and the Reagan administration's, as we're seeing here in particular, involvement with the Contras in direct contravention of a congressional bill that was passed that banned that kind of activity, is something that affects all of us, because essentially, if you want it broken down into the simplest terms, not only are we helping to contribute to the chipping away of democracy as usual, but if you want it to be even more right in your face, that's your tax money going for illegal purposes to help basically fascist terrorists kill civilians, among other things. You may remember we talked on the last One Step Beyond and have talked before about the Nicaraguan wedding party that was ambushed by the Contras. These are these brave men that Ronald Reagan is sending his blessing to. These are people who are shooting brides on the Nicaraguan border, and this is your tax dollars at work and your vote coming home to roost, to mix an elaborate metaphor.
Also, for those listeners, and there are many of them, who were too young to have experienced the anti-Castro paramilitary operations during the 60s or are not really aware of them, this is simply like a larger version of the Operation 40 and Operation Mongoose operation. Those operations which were conducted against Fidel Castro. Perhaps the only difference is that the Contra operations are receiving far less flack, although Congress has moved to cut off funding and has in fact cut off quote military unquote funding to the Contras. It hasn't. The Contras really haven't missed a beat in this whole thing, and this is exactly the kind of thing we looked at in connection with Operation 40. Basically, a paramilitary operation conducted in the United States, except that the Contras are in Nicaragua. But it's exactly the same kind of thing we saw with Castro, but a larger version of it, and a little bit farther from our own shores.
Okay, continuing now to talk a little bit about the beginnings of the World Anti-Communist League. Bear in mind, of course, that as we're trying to show with these Radio Free America broadcasts, when they say something like the first sentence here, the World Anti-Communist League was founded in 1967, we're talking about yet another permutation of a series of almost identical groups with identical goals and, as we will see during our broadcast tonight, near identical memberships. So this is merely the changing of a name or the founding of a new umbrella group that is usually being talked about.
One could think about it as the culmination of a process which had been going on for some time, because the actual founding, not only are we going to look at all of these elements how they developed over a period of the better part of a half a century, but specifically the organizations which were to combine with the World Anti-Communist League were working together in a steering committee aiming at the formation of just such an organization for the better part of a decade, and we're going to take a look at some of the steps in that formation in just a minute.
Okay, continuing with the Village Voice article by Connison and Wass. The World Anti-Communist League was founded in 1967 at a conference in Taipei as an expansion of the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, organized more than a decade earlier in response to the Chinese Revolution and the Korean War. The founders of the Asian League included the followers of Reverend Sun Myung Moon, whose aide, Asami Kaboki, still controls the Japanese chapter, and whose front group, Kauza, is also heavily involved in Contra aid efforts. Let me emphasize that again, because Kauza crops up a lot very close to home. They're very heavily involved in El Salvador, in Nicaragua, and other places in Latin America. C-A-U-S-A, Kauza, is a front group for the Unification Church in Sun Myung Moon and the World Anti-Communist League. Ryuichi Sasakawa, the Japanese billionaire jailed as a war criminal after World War II, who once called himself the world's wealthiest fascist, was also involved.
It's a name we're coming back to a little later in the broadcast.
Joining the Moon and Sasakawa groups in WACL were a collection of East European emigre organizations, many with past histories of Nazi collaboration, and a variety of Latin American rightist outfits, including the Cuban terrorist Alpha 66 and the predecessors of today's death squads. Their U.S. supporters were the remnants of the old far-right China lobby, including Anna Chenault. More than a few of these WACL members enjoyed the patronage of the CIA, but the organization as a whole failed to gain much notoriety until the late 1970s. In 1974, a few WACL members in England and the United States began to worry about the growing presence of outright anti-Semitism and fascism among their international ranks. They had been stunned by the deluge of anti-Semitic literature at the 1972 convention in Mexico City. A lengthy memo, marked confidential, was subsequently circulated to board members of the American World Anti-Communist League chapter by Dr. Stefan Possoni, a well-known figure on the American right who is a political scientist at the Hoover Institute.
Also a name we're going to come back to later.
Possoni's memo outlined the bizarre political theology of the Mexican chapter, which headed WACL's Latin American wing, known as Confederación Anticomunista Latinoamericana, or CAL. By the way, we've been talking about CAL and their affiliations in some other groups. We've been talking about TECOS, T-E-C-O-S, and the Autonomous University in Guadalajara that they virtually control. This is the same group that they've been talking about. The memo quoted several anti-Semitic tracts distributed by the Mexicans, including a book originating in Madrid, which was written by an ideologue of the Romanian Iron Guard. Just stepping in, the Romanian Iron Guard was the fascist collaborative government in Romania during World War II. The burden of their argument was the existence of a, quote, vast Masonic Jewish conspiracy against the church, which was really behind communism. Warning about the damage their alliance with, quote, neo-Nazis and anti-Semites might cause if exposed, the memo urged that American WACL members and the honorary chairman, Dr. Ku Cheng Kang, quote, formulate a policy on the subject, unquote. The memo did not recommend the expulsion of the anti-Semites. In March 1974, Jeffrey Stuart Smith, a former British Conservative member of Parliament who had already quit WACL the previous year, issued a memorandum denouncing, quote, the pro-Nazi sympathies and anti-Semitism of some of the WACL members. His revelations shook the World Anti-Communist League, especially its American members, because he recited the contacts between CAL, that was the Mexican organization, and a variety of Nazi organizations around the world, especially in Germany and Northern Europe. More important, Stuart Smith noted, was the failure of any other WACL members to censure or expel the offending members, and he added a list of occasions when he had tried to warn Ku Cheng Kang and had been ignored. From Stuart Smith's account, it was clear that WACL in the mid-1970s was becoming a sort of anti-Semitic or fascist international. But the next World Anti-Communist League conference was held on schedule in Washington in 1974, hosted by some of the current American board members, including Lev Dobryansky and Phyllis Schlafly's husband, Fred. Remember Lev Dobryansky, especially Phyllis Schlafly's husband Fred, I'm sure you won't forget. Lev Dobryansky we're going to be getting back to. Though General Singlaub himself did not yet belong to the WACL, they're talking about as of the time of this meeting in Washington in 74. The following year, under increasing internal pressure, the U.S. chapter pulled out. Skipping down a little bit. The U.S. continued to be represented in WACL, however, by Dr. Roger Pearson, a British, quote, scientific racist and anti-Semitic publicist based in Washington. Although Pearson embarrassed even WACL, which ousted him in 1980, he received a letter in 1982 from President Reagan on White House stationery praising his, quote, substantial contributions to promoting those ideals and principles that we value at home and abroad. Let me just read that one more time because it's such a great paragraph. Although Pearson, this is the scientific racist, although Pearson embarrassed even the World Anti-Communist League, which ousted him in 1980, he received a letter in 1982, 2 years after the World, after WACL even had kicked him out, received a letter in 1982 from President Reagan on White House stationery praising his, quote, substantial contributions to promoting those ideals and principles that we value at home and abroad, unquote. That letter, which Pearson used in subsequent fundraising, has never been repudiated by the administration. Pearson's role in WACL was covered extensively by the Washington Post when WACL convened in the nation's capital in 1978. The Post account, by Paul Valentine, identified dozens of neo-Nazi, fascist, and racist leaders there, including former American Nazi William Pierce, by the way, author of The Turner Diaries, a book we talked about at great length during the Aryan Nations broadcast.
Also head of the National Alliance, which is a Nazi group which grew out of George Lincoln Rockwell's group and which the Reagan administration has been agitating for a tax break for.
Italian fascists, this is also other people besides William Pierce that were at the 78 Washington Convention. Italian fascist Giorgio Almirante, South African racial theorist Ivor Benson, and Willis Carto of the Liberty Lobby. Paraguay hosted many of the same characters at the 1979 meeting in Asunción. But again, some of WACL's constituent groups were growing restive. Pearson had created a parallel subgroup of European fascists known as Euro-WACL, which had demanded the expulsion of the more, quote, moderate European chapters. In retaliation, his rivals from several Scandinavian chapters published a 28-page exposé of the Nazi affiliations of the Euro-WACL members and their introduction to WACL by Pearson. By 1980, Pearson and his European allies in the attempted putsch had been ejected. Singlaub was recruited to WACL that same year when he spoke to a meeting it sponsored in Australia. A year later, with the Reagan administration in power, the former U.S. members of WACL met in Phoenix and decided to rejoin with Singlaub as their leader. Despite the purge of Pearson, WACL was not particularly clean in 1981, when Singlaub headed the U.S. delegation to the 14th WACL conference in Taipei. The Mexican anti-Semites and Latin American fascist groups led by Raimundo Guerrero, already well known to Pasoni and the other U.S. members, were still present, as were former Nazi intelligence officer Dr. Theodor Oberlander, West German far-rightist Alfred Gehlen, and the Cuban terrorists.
Remember Dr. Theodor Oberlander, one of the most important names we're going to be talking about this evening, also Alfred Gehlen, not Galen, but Gehlen. We're coming back to him later, too.
No action was taken against any of these groups until columnist Jack Anderson publicly exposed the anti-Semitism of the Mexican group and the role of WACL. Through its Latin wing, C-A-L, in death squad activities throughout Central and South America. In the wake of Anderson's revelations, CAL was expelled in January 1984, but the core of the old Latin fascist apparatus remains. Skipping on down. The expulsion of the Mexican chapter and the reorganization of CAL into a new Latin wing called Federación de Entidades Democráticas de América Latina, otherwise known as FEDAL, F-E-D-A-L, has done little to rid WACL of fascist influences or death squad ties. FEDAL is headed by Dr. Carlos Barbieri Filho of Brazil, a former CAL leader who was identified by Dutch journalist Henrik Kruger as a Brazilian link to the Argentine AAA death squad, which fomented terror under the military regime. Former WACL member Jeffrey Stewart Smith says that the difference between CAL, C-A-L, and FEDAL is, quote, merely a name change. an ominous presence in Dallas, as he has been at many WACL and CAL conferences before, was Mario Sandoval Alarcón, former Guatemalan vice president and founder of the ultra-right National Liberation Movement. Sandoval is widely regarded as the man who perfected the use of death squads as part of an organized political program. Asked at a press conference about Sandoval, Singlaub denied knowing that the Guatemalan was in Dallas. But Sandoval was listed as a delegate on the official list released later that day. The general explained that the former CAL members were not barred from WACL membership. Sandoval's pupil in death squad tactics, former Salvadoran Major General Roberto Dabuisson, didn't come to Dallas. The man who told German reporters that he admired Hitler because, quote, "you Europeans had the right idea, you saw the Jews were behind communism and you started to kill them," unquote, was embroiled in a power struggle within his far-right Arena party at home. But after being ousted from his party, Dabuisson announced a few days later that he intended to found a political institute in San Salvador affiliated with WACL. Singlaub claimed to know nothing of this, although he acknowledged a long-term relationship with Dabuisson, who Singlaub said, quote, "has his strengths and weaknesses," unquote. FEDAL's president is Juan Manuel Frutos of Paraguay, an official of the Stroessner government who may succeed to the presidency when the general dies or retires. Paraguay's government is best known in the U.S. for protecting Nazi war criminal Dr. Josef Mengele. The East European emigre representation in WACL is as disreputable as ever. The Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, ABN, is headed by Yaroslav Stetsko, a member of WACL's executive board who briefly headed a Nazi-supported regime in the Ukraine during World War II. And we're going to be talking about Yaroslav Stetsko and the ABN at some length. The ABN's latest campaign, in concert with other emigre groups, has been to abolish the Justice Department's Office of Special Investigations. That's the U.S. Justice Department's Office of Special Investigations, which prosecutes war criminals residing in the U.S. This effort has been replete with anti-Semitic overtones. During WACL's overtly neo-Nazi period, the ABN magazine joined campaign to free the fascist Ordine Nuovo terrorist in Italy, asserting that the bombers of the Bologna train station were, quote, "political prisoners." The ABN group has particularly strong ties to the White House through WACL board member Lev Dobryansky, named ambassador to the Bahamas by Reagan, and his daughter Paula, a member of the National Security Council staff. Joining the ABN were representatives of other pro-Nazi emigre groups from Romania, Bielorussia, and Croatia, which is now part of Yugoslavia. Cirila Ciuntu of Canada, a WACL delegate, remains a proud member of the Romanian Iron Guard, notorious for its savage pogroms against Jews in the early 1940s. Ivan Kosiak, a member of the wartime pro-Nazi Bielorussian Central Council, according to former OSI prosecutor John Loftus, was also a delegate. The Canadian delegation, partners with Singlaub's U.S. Council for World Freedom in the North American wing of WACL, was also suspect. Delegate Patrick Walsh, for example, leads the Canadian League of Rights, part of an anti-Semitic federation with chapters in several British Commonwealth countries. Its leader, Eric Butler of Australia, is best known for his book, The International Jew. Walsh is also listed as a correspondent for Spotlight, the Liberty Lobby's anti-Jewish far-right weekly, although he claimed in a Village Voice interview never to have written for it.
Okay, now, basically, we've looked at a lot of, an awful lot of names, and obviously it's going to be impossible to even touch on those looking back. What we're really doing is laying out some of the material that we're going to be developing at greater length during the course of the broadcast this evening. Now, we're going to go over the breakdown that I'm about to give you, in a sense, again, in an article I'm about to read you. But basically, we're going to be looking at four main groups in the World Anti-Communist League, and they group geographically. Specifically, we're going to think of WACL as comprised of four main elements: the North American element, the Latin American element, the European and Eurasian element, and the Asian element. Okay? Now, as indicated to a considerable extent by some of the names that we've already looked at in connection with this article coming from the United States, people like Bunker Hunt, people like William Pierce, people like Robert Morris, one could think of, and in fact it would be accurate to think of the American branch as sort of the Aryan nations, the grouping of far-right wing and explicitly fascist groups that we looked at during the course of our Aryan Nations series, all four shows, could be thought of as comprising the bulk of the American wing of WACL, one of the four groups. We're going to take a look at something called the American Security Council at greater length here in just a couple of minutes. That could be thought of, and in fact we looked at that in connection with the Aryan Nations as part of our Aryan Nations grouping. We're going to be taking a look at the American Security Council, the key American link to the World Anti-Communist League, in just a minute. We're also going to take a look this evening, well actually we're going to be reviewing by way of tape, the Asian elements of WACL, primarily the elements around the Kuomintang of nationalist China, now on Taiwan, and also the elements coming from South Korea. Specifically, we're going to take a look at elements from the Unification Church. And we'll be taking a look at those via tape from Radio Free America number 11. Then we're going to be taking a look at the, in tonight's broadcast, the European wing of the World Anti-Communist League, grouped largely around the League of the Anti-Bolshevik Nations, the ABN group, featuring Lev Dobryansky and people like that. We're going to take a look at ABN, the European fascist movements, minus Italian and Spanish groups, who we're going to talk about in our next series. And we're going to be talking about them specifically as extensions of the Third Reich and of the Galen organization, and all of the groups this evening. And during the course of our during the course of our Anti-Communist League series, we're going to be looking at the WACL as a reformation or a continuation of the very same fascist groups who emerged, who converged, I really should say, in the 1930s and 40s under the Axis powers. We will be looking at the World Anti-Communist League as a second anti-Comintern, if you will. The Anti-Comintern Pact was formed between Italy, Japan, and Germany, and was basically aimed at not only destroying the Soviet Union, but also preventing the spread of socialism or communism worldwide. We're going to be taking a look at the ABN and European group this evening. The fourth group is the Latin American group, and we're going to be taking a look at the Latin American wing of WACL in our next show, in addition to taking a look at connections to the assassination of President Kennedy. But this evening, we're going to finish up, in a sense, what we've been looking at during Aryan Nations, the North American wing of WACL. We're going to look at the Asian wing of WACL, and we're going to look at Europe and Eurasia this evening, Latin America and the Kennedy assassination, during our next broadcast.
And lest, once again, especially those of you who are newish listeners, should get confused during with this plethora of names and places and locations and groups and things like that, the most important thing to bear in mind here, and the reason that you need to pay attention to this, it may seem like that you know we're just putting together this thing to show how clever we are and how many names we know and how many obscure connections we can come up with, but bear in mind, the main thing going on here is that these people, these anti-Semites, these fascists, these right-wing lunatics, basically, if you will have it that way, are currently members of our United States government. They are ambassadors. They are members of the National Security Council. They are important advisors on military and intelligence affairs. And in the case of John Singlaub and the Contras, they are, in fact, implementing U.S. foreign policy right now in Central America, one of the most troubled and potentially inflammatory spots on the face of the earth. They are those right-wing revanchist lunatics are the people who are implementing against Congress and the will of the American people, implementing U.S. government policy.